What's happening? My name is Mick Donaghy and thank you for tuning in to The Recruitment Show, a podcast for recruiters by recruiters. So thank you for joining me. This is Mick Donaghy and this is episode 2 of The Recruitment Show. So I basically just wanted to start off my podcast by giving you an introduction to who I am. And I know that's a pretty profound sort of question that, you know, a lot of people actually ask themselves. You know, who are we is something that, you know, intrinsically people ask, you know, on a day-to-day basis, on a yearly basis, you know, who we are and why are we here and what are we here to do, you know. It's something that is quite difficult to answer, but it's something that I have struggled a bit with over the last number of years, especially moving from Ireland to New Zealand. I sort of went away from who I was as an individual and who I basically presented myself to be. So basically taking it back, I've been in the recruitment industry for the last 7 years. As I said in the first podcast, it has been an absolute journey. But for me, I started off in recruitment as any other person does, moving into an industry and being, you know, a complete novice, not knowing anything about recruitment. You know, going in there on my first day, you know, basically I was only excited to wear a suit. You know, I thought the vision of success is the man who wears the suit. And I think, you know, people like Guy Ritchie would probably still say that, but back then, 7 years ago, when I was moving into the recruitment industry, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, didn't have a beard, had a bit of a bum chin, but still quite excited to get into a professional services type role. Then on my first day, you know, I realized what the job was, and it was, you know, bloody hard. I was actually recruited in a team of 4 at the time. So there was myself and 3 others. One of them was, you know, in his mid to late 30s, had like 15 years sales experience. And then there was one who was actually a teacher but ended up moving into recruitment. She was also in her like late 20s. And then there was another individual. I can't even remember who they were. But by the end of the second week, I was the only person left. So all 3 of them had packed it in. And that's quite synonymous with the recruitment industry in itself. You know, a lot of people leave within the first year of recruitment. And that was a big learning curve for me. It was absolutely huge going into recruitment. It was something that I wasn't expecting, you know, and the particular company I was in at the time was highly, highly KPI driven. So in the firm I'm in now, we have pretty much a catch-up meeting once a week with regards to, you know, our productivity. It's a typical sales type meeting. You know, it's once a week. We go through, you know, what we've done and what we're expected to achieve, you know, how we're veering towards our targets, you know, what we will, you know, achieve that particular month and that particular quarter, etc., etc. That back in the day, though, I had one of those every single day, you know, so you can imagine going into work at 8 o'clock in the morning and you basically had to have a sales meeting every day. What did you do the day before, and what you're going to do today? But it wasn't just, you know, getting yourself ramped up and motivated for the day. It was very, very specific, going through with an iron ruler and go and say, right, have you called this person? Have you called this person? Have you called this person? So I went through that journey of that really, really highly driven KPI environment. And within the first 3 months, I absolutely hated it. You know, you had to do 20 new BD calls every single day, 20 new connections every single day. So, you know, you may call 100 companies, but you have to speak to 20, you know, and you had to make it a temp seal every day. You had to meet, I think it was something like 5 candidates a week or 5 candidates a day or something like that. It was phenomenal. But what I took from that, I still use today. And that basically created a sense of what I needed to do to achieve success. But I started off that job and I was a nobody, you know. I hadn't established my name. I was coming out of university. I dropped out of university at the time. I was studying architecture initially. I finished school with, pretty good A levels. Came first in art and design in the UK, and I really, wanted to move into architecture and, help, change the landscape of Ireland and Britain with the buildings I was going to create. And I went into architecture, and it was like being hit with a fucking pan around the head, and it just really wasn't for me. So moved into recruitment, trying to establish myself, and within the first 3 months I was like, right, this is fucking terrible, I can't believe I've left my degree to get into this. And I remember going through a whole process of, interviewing for different companies. One of the companies I interviewed at the time with was Hays. This is about 3 or 4 months into my recruitment journey, and it was awful. So I had like 4 interviews with Hays, and I still didn't get the job. But that was probably a good thing in itself. I think if I had have ended up working for Hays, I probably, would have jumped off the nearest cliff. But I ended up getting a job with a firm that I ended up really, really enjoying. That's where I actually learned how to recruit. So going through that journey of, a young guy in recruitment, not really knowing what I was supposed to be doing, joining as a team of 4, 3 people, quitting within the first 2 weeks. I was sitting there by myself for the first, I think it was 10 months, trying to make heads or tail of what I was doing. Built some connections, started doing some decent work, started building things up, and then I got a new job with a firm who were more technical, less KPI driven, but more, very, very specific on what we were trying to achieve. There were KPIs that you had to hit, and there was better commission structure with it as well. So I joined the first company as Michael, and then after probably moving into the next firm, I started to really settle into who I was, and to my friends, I was Mick. So it was in that company for 3 years, and that's definitely where I cut my teeth. I found out how to recruit in itself, how to source candidates, how to write profiles on candidates, how to represent properly, how to actually go about business development. So I properly, learned the nuts and bolts of recruitment in that firm. I remember getting some real, really good relationships built up, doing solid months, was the top biller there for a little while. And I was there for 3 years, and that particular company, Vickerstock in Belfast, I learned so much about that, about recruitment and about people. The whole people element of recruitment is everything. Within that particular firm, I learned about the emotional intelligence involved around recruitment. How do you actually go about dealing with 2 different types of people, your client and your candidate, and you are that person in between, and you are that information broker, brokering information from candidate A to client B, and there's so many variables in between that can go wrong, and you have to manage, and that's probably what I learned the most. And during that time, I think I joined Vickerstock when I was around 22, and I grew up massively during that time. So when I started, I was in a long-term relationship that ended, and after about 6 months of being in Vickerstock and being around high performing consultants and learning about what actually recruitment is, my mom sadly passed away, and that was like another massive blow to me and everyone in my family. So at that time, it was a struggle, but I learned so much from that. I grew as a person, probably by like 10 years. I never ended up losing myself, but I felt like I ended up creating myself. The fire in my belly, it ended up not just being in my belly, it just consumed me, and that was on a massive level. I didn't want to just work anymore. I wanted to work, and I wanted to live, and I wanted to, go out into the world and scream from the rooftops who I am and I'm here, and I started to travel. That was a massive part for me. I wanted to see the world. I began to feel that, life is too short, because life is too short. If you're not going to go out and grab it by the balls, then it's going to, sail away from you. And that's what I learned during that process. My mom ended up dying of a brain hemorrhage, so it was a very, very quick process. But for me, that created me. I was a boy, and I was essentially an older teenager by the time I was 22. I was very much a young man who, relied on his parents to make him comfortable. And during that process, I went out and said, I'm going to make myself uncomfortable. I'm going to make myself someone who is going to enlighten others, and someone who's going to make the most of what he can with the skill sets that he has. And it sounds a little bit cheesy, but that's, how I ended up sort of going through that sort of process of losing someone in my life. So that basically brought me so much joy out of a dark, bad place. I ended up really loving myself. And that sounds really cringeworthy, but I sort of took myself from a bad place, getting out of a sort of a pretty bad relationship, to only really sort of stepping myself into the adult world and actually working and being in a professional environment, to really sort of going through that process of losing my mom, to now saying, fuck it, I'm going to go out and make myself everything that I can be. And that process was probably, has been the best, part of my life. It was fucking incredible, from all the traveling that I would do, from, all around Europe. I remember interrailing through 7 countries in 23 days, which was bananas. And every month I was going somewhere new, may it be London, may it be Barcelona, may it be to somewhere around, Europe or Ireland. Basically I was living for the crack, and in Ireland that means living for the fun and living for the banter. And I was basically working to live rather than living to work. So I would hit it really, really hard day in, day out. Monday to Friday, I would fucking smash it. I'd be the first one to work, and then I would leave. I'd be the first one to leave as well. I wouldn't be the last one to leave. All that shit about, you gotta, the first one in, last one out. Yeah, that's very good. But I sort of went, I had a mentality, I'm going to go in here and I have a to-do list, and I'm going to absolutely cut the head off that to-do list, and I'm going to make sure that I hit my targets every single day. And I was 22, 23 at that stage. And I think I was the youngest in the company, and I was billing the most in the company. That's because of my drive and my desire to make it happen. And I made some amazing relationships, and I did everything I could to see the world and make of me what I wanted to be. So during those 3 years, I went through a process of, as I said, loving myself in a good way, in a respectful way. I want people to respect me, so I'm going to do this. I'm not going to let people walk over me, so I'm going to do this. And I was living the dream, really, as a 22, 23 year old. And I decided after 3 years of that, I wanted a little bit more. So I'd saved some money. And when I say some, to be honest, I pretty much partied for 3 years and lived the good life. I managed to scrape together, I think, around about $5,000. And out of that, basically, was my last 2 months' paychecks. And I booked a ticket to America. traveled through America with my best mate. Went through all the West Coast of America. Was absolutely incredible. And then ended up in Fiji and then New Zealand. So 2 years ago, I landed in New Zealand in 2016. And I went through a bit of a process there as well. So having been Mick Donaghy to all my mates back home, and that is, you know, kind of a very much an Irish name, you know, Mick Donaghy. It doesn't get much more Irish than that. And moving to New Zealand, I wasn't too sure what way to sort of present myself, you know, to the director of the company I still work in now. I was always Mick, and I've always been Mick internally. But for some reason, I decided to call myself Mike. And to be honest, I fucking hate the name Mike. I really, 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 really hate it. It's just something that, you know, back in Ireland, if you're called Mike, you're a bit of a prick. You know, you're basically someone who sells a really shit Lexus on the Boucher Road in Belfast. And if you're from Belfast, then you'll know what I'm talking about. But, you know, just Mike, it was never something I ever felt comfortable with. But with my accent, you know, coming to New Zealand, getting on the phone, smashing the phone straight away, and, you know, here, it's Mick. And they're like, who, Nick? And I'm like, no, Mick. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, fuck it. It's Mike from Franklin Smith, you know. And then everyone gets Mike over here, you know, because Mike is, you know, you can be Mike and you're just nice and you're that guy who, you know, buys coffees and sips pina coladas, you know. But, you know, over home, it's the same guy who sips pina coladas, but he also probably gets punched at the end of the night. Over here, it's a little bit different. So I started branding myself in New Zealand as Mike, and I've always fucking felt uncomfortable with it. So for a year, I went with it, and during that time, I, you know, went from a recruiter who had, I think I had 4 or 5 years experience at that time, moved to New Zealand, and it was completely different. Getting into the New Zealand market was just, you know, breath of fresh air. I was always recruiting for roles in Ireland that typically were in London, and trying to persuade an Irishman to go to London for 2 weeks and get home at the weekends was fucking terrible. It was really, really hard, you know. First of all, the English and Irish don't really get on that well. Second of all, London and working in London can be a really, really difficult environment to work in. And you weren't actually getting paid that much more because you were getting paid by an Irish company who have, you know, deep pockets and short arms kind of thing, you know. So getting to New Zealand was a breath of fresh air. The Auckland market was and is just still booming. There's a hive of construction going on. When I first arrived in New Zealand, I actually thought, you know, I actually might just fuck around and go get a job in a coffee shop. But it turns out that coffee shops don't hire recruiters, so didn't actually get too far in that process, and everything in New Zealand is extremely expensive, so I kind of thought that I needed to get a real job. So ended up moving into recruitment, calling myself Mike, and that worked out well for probably a year to a year and a half. Was the top biller for my first full year in the firm, and worked out really well. Got moved into a recruitment management position, which has been a huge learning curve for me. You know, you go from billing every day to billing and managing billers every day. And that's bloody hard, you know. You go from being selfish, I want to make commission, to I would like to help someone else make commission. And that's like, goes against pretty much everything that I had worked up to until then. And that's difficult because you're dealing with so many different personalities and so many different types of motivation within those personalities. And saying that, you know, it's, I'd say within the last year, I've learned more about myself than I had done so probably until 3-4 years ago, until my mom died, you know. And that's hugely important for me that I'm learning, because if I'm not learning, then I'm pulling my heart out. You know, I have to learn something every day. You know, my fiance will tell you that if I'm not watching a documentary or doing something that I'm actually learning from, that I'll fucking put my heart out. You know, if most people are happy enough, you know, just watching a new series. I need to know that it's going to be good, or I need to know that I'm going to learn from it if I'm going to invest my time in it. And that's just the way that I am. So it's been amazing over the last year learning management. I mean, what the fuck is management, really? You know, I actually don't even like the term management. I rather see myself as a leader. You know, the type of person who's right, I'll take responsibility. I'll take everything on the weight of my shoulders, and I will fight for my team. You know, that's who I am as an individual. I end up actually disliking KPIs, but seeing in management what KPIs do, there is an element of me that goes, well, you know, that makes sense. And I've learned a lot over the last 12 months. Absolutely, it's been huge. And still learning as well on that sort of billing side. You know, how do you keep billing? How do you keep your relationships going? How do you keep things moving forward, as well as manage a team of consultants? And that's absolutely massive to me. But over the last 3-4 months, I've decided to go and actually be who I am. You know, I started off as Michael in First Choice, in my very first job, where I was, you know, told to slick my hair back, had to shave every day, had to wear a suit every single day, had to have my suit buttoned up, and that was it. Good boy, move on. You know, that's kind of what I was at that point. Then I moved into Vicarstock, technical recruiters, very, very specific of what they do and what we did at the time. Learned so much about the emotional intelligence of recruitment, so much about how to actually deliver. You know, that was my schooling, 3 years. That was like a university degree. And then moving that into what I have here in New Zealand, managing a whole team of awesome consultants and billing myself. But when I was at Vicarstock, I was Mick, and that's who I always, you know, always liked to be. I was comfortable being myself. Moved to New Zealand, tried something different. It worked, but really didn't work for me. So over the last 3 months, I went, you know what, fuck it, I'm Mick Donaghy. That's why this podcast is coming from me, who I am. And me as an individual, as what this podcast is about, I've went through a process within my career. I've went from, you know, the yes sir, please sir, you know, three bags full sir, to, you know, in Vicarstock, you know, my boss at the time used to say, Mick, I have to, you know, get the sweeper out, I need to get the brush out to clean up all the mess that you've made, because I was always fighting. That's who I always am. I'm a fighter. I'm like, you know what, I'd rather fight someone and make an impact than be someone who's not known at all. And that is me. You know, I'll literally go out there and, you know, put my balls on the table and say, this is who I am. You know, and I'd rather be fully me than someone who's not fully me, you know. And that sounds really cliche and a bit, you know, weird, and it is a bit like that. However, it's for me, it's important that you be yourself, and that's how I think being totally, you know, unapologetically you is who we all need to be. You know, who am I? What are we doing here? I think that comes from accepting who you are and accepting, you know, accepting your faults, accepting, you know, your the lack of skill that you might have in certain areas, or the fantastic talents that you have in different areas. You know, just being you and being yourself will get you further. People will buy into that and invest into that and engage with that so much more than someone who's pretending to be someone. And for a year, I probably pretended to be someone. You know, I'm like, oh, fuck me, it just makes me cringe even thinking about it. You know, who I am is Mick. You know, and it's like, who are you? Mick Donaghy? Nick? And you're like, no, Mick with an M for fucking magic, okay? For McGregor, for Conor McGregor himself. So that's just who I am. You know, I've went through a process of actually struggling to find my identity, and this is who I am. I'm a recruiter, and I'm happy to be a recruiter. I'm proud to be a recruiter, whereas a lot of us can sort of say, you know, I'm a recruitment consultant. You know, I'm like, that's who I was, you know, a number of years ago, a little bit embarrassed that we're a recruitment consultant. We've got that black mark over our heads. You know, we're kind of like used car salesmen or, you know, dodgy bankers or tax consultants or something like that. I'm like, yeah, well, fuck it. Maybe that's some of you, you know, but that's not me. You know, I add value. I don't talk shit. You know, I truly give everything that I've got. You know, I truly believe that I can fill most jobs within maximum a week. But I truly believe the jobs I recruit for now, I can recruit and find a suitable option who fits every single box within 48 hours. And that's because I work like a possessed animal. I work so hard to find that person. And, you know, this is what I tell my team. You know, you can't just expect things to happen for you. You have to go and make things happen for you. And that's what's in my mindset. You have to make things happen. And that's who I am. So I'm Mick Donaghy. I'm proud to be a recruiter. That's why I'm doing this the Recruitment Show podcast, because we are what we do in some respect. You know, that's why doctors are called Dr. Phil or Dr. Barry. You know, it is what it is. But, you know, we are what we do. And, you know, if you are a builder, you're probably going to be known as a builder. You know, you can always transform who you are, you know, but the reality of it is that if you're a rocket scientist, you're going to be a rocket scientist. If you are a really savvy business person, you're going to be known as that, you know, and that's what your brand is. Your brand is what you do. And I'm Mick Donaghy, and I'm a recruiter, and I'm fucking happy to be a recruiter because I add value. We're improving people's lives, and that's the reality of it. Unless you do a real shit job and you put, you know, good people in bad jobs. But if you're recruiting for good companies with good morals, you know, and they look after their staff and they offer progression, you can literally take someone from nothing to something really great. And that's huge. Like, the importance behind that is phenomenal. So, you know, my job and the jobs of most of the people listening to this is just, the recruitment means something. And if you do it well, you'll excel. And you can really excel people's lives as well. Moving someone from a position whereby they're struggling a little bit, you know, they can't put, you know, they can struggling to put food on the table for their kids or whatever it might be, and, you know, they're driving around in a car that keeps breaking down, and, you know, they've got some good experience, but the reality of it is they're in a firm and the confidence is low and they're just not too sure, and someone out of the blue rings them up with a positive attitude, with some constructive feedback for them, someone who's going to listen to them and understand them, someone who's going to find out who they are as an individual and not just as a professional capacity, someone who's going to actually, you know, hear out where they're struggling and where their talents are and what value they can give to another firm. And taking that person and presenting them to a role that, you know, adds, that they're going to fit into straight away. They get the culture, they're working with good people, their boss is really, really awesome and motivating. You know, there's maybe a 10, 15K salary increase on that. And they go from struggling to make ends meet to, you know, doing well for themselves, buying themselves a nice car, you know, having that confidence piece back, you know, because they're confident, they're more likely to be healthy and more likely to be, you know, looking after themselves and their physicality, and that all evolves. And if you're doing, you know, being more self-aware and being more healthy and work, then you're going to be better at what you do and you're going to likely get more promotions. And how did that all start? It started 2 years ago with a phone call with Mick Donaghy or Sarah or John. And, you know, that's the importance of recruitment. It can make massive, massive differences to people. And it's happened to me. I remember, you know, last year or about 18 months ago, someone rings me at 4 o'clock on a Friday. And I'm not being, you know, racist, but sound like they have a foreign voice. And I'm like, oh, you know, New Zealand wants experience. New Zealand wants New Zealand experience. I'm like, well, I've had 10 of these calls today. And I'm like, well, okay, just come in and meet me. This is who I am. You know, I'll go, right, come in and meet me. I want, give me 10 minutes and, you know, I'll see if I can help. So the person comes in and comes in with their wife, sit and listen to them. You know, their English was a little bit okay on the phone, but was 10 times better in real life. Meet with them, meet with their wife, and went, you know what, I'm going to see what I can do here. So did what I needed to do, registered them, found out everything I could. 10 minutes later, no exaggeration, I get a call from a client. Mick, or at that time it was Mike, can you get me a job? Can you get me a site manager? Just happened to be that this man was a site manager. I say, you know what, I actually just met a guy and he was a fucking superstar, so you need to meet him. I can get him across to you today or tomorrow, whatever suits. Yep, blah, blah, blah. I get them across, give the candidate like loads of interview preparation, and literally gets into the job and contracts into that job for a year. Because he contracts into that job for a year, he then gets an offer from the boss of that company who moved to a different company to go to that company. But I had also at that time got him another offer for a different company. So he takes the offer that I had, and now he's in his second job in New Zealand with one of the best commercial construction contractors there is. But to sweeten the story even more so, his wife also worked in construction, and I got her a job too. And that was all purely out of just meeting someone, just like literally taking a whim on someone. I met them, I looked them in the eyeballs, they told me who they were and what they do, and both of them, as two individuals, one of them works for the biggest construction company in New Zealand, and the other works for the third biggest construction company in New Zealand, and they're working on salaries of, you know, six-figure salaries. So literally, because I took a punt on them, and because I listened and opened myself up to just understanding who they are, their lives completely changed. You know, I could have easily went, no, I'm not interested in speaking to him. And they could have had that call from six or seven, or that response from six or seven other recruiters. So if you think of you as a recruiter at the moment, who you are, what you stand for, what is your mission statement? Every recruiter should have a mission statement. What are you here to do? What is your vision? And my vision is, I want to impact and help as many people as I can, professionally and financially. And when I tell people I'm in, I'm in. And when I'm out, I'm out. And that's just who I am. You know, I'll tell you if I'm in, and I'll tell you when I'm out. And there's no gray area. It's just pure black and white. If I don't want to deal with you, I'm not going to deal with you, because either I don't think I can, or I don't think it's going to work out. You know, how you operate and how I operate. So I think every recruiter should have a mission statement, and I think every recruiter should really think about who they are as an individual. So this was a little brief introduction of who I am. You know, this year for me, part of my mission statement, it's not Michael, it's not Mike, it's Mick Donaghy, and I'm here to achieve everything that I can to help as many people as I can, to add value to the recruitment industry, to be a real solid flag bearer, someone who's actually going to wave the flag and say, you know what, there are good recruiters out there, and they will seriously, seriously add value to you as an individual or to you as an organization. So thank you for joining me again on the recruitment show. This has been episode 2, and I hope you have got some nuggets of gold out of this, and I look forward to potentially hearing from you, or just look forward to hearing from me in the third episode. Cheers. Oh, and just before you go, I would like to leave you with one of my favorite quotes from Martin Luther King Jr. And this is the reason why on the Mick Donaghy logo, there's two arrows moving forward. And that's because of this particular quote. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward." Thank you. My name is Mick Donaghy, and I look forward to doing another podcast on episode 3.